All right, welcome back to the Bread and Butter Podcast. I'm your host, Brecklin, and today we're here with Ryan Nicole. She's a binge eating therapist, and I actually have been watching Ryan Nicole on and off for years. So this is, I feel like I kind of know you well, but we've literally never met. But so excited to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. And oh my God, I didn't know that you've been with me for that long.
Yeah, no, on and off for probably like, I would say 2 or 3 years I've been seeing your content. And I'm like, okay. And it's been interesting. I've kind of come across your content in and out of my own journey. And so I remember there were times where I didn't quite understand your message, where, you know, all of a sudden I was really obsessed with your message and just wanted to know all about it. So it's so fun to kind of just, it feels kind of full circle to me to have you on. So just to kind of like jump right into anyone who doesn't know you, kind of just give us like a brief who you are, where you're from, kind of how you grew up.
Yeah, my name is Ryan. I live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, but I'm originally from Arizona. I moved out here 4 years ago for an internship for my master's. The intention was that I was only going to be out here for a year, and we are still here. So very different environment, but I do really love it. It's funny because when I was telling people that I was moving here, they were like, why are you moving there? And then as I was posting more pictures, they're like, wait, where do you live? So I live in Jackson Hole. I really, really love it. I am a binge eating therapist. So I got my LPC, licensed professional counselor, 2 years ago, and have been running a private practice ever since. I do online virtual coaching, and I'm also a recovered binge eater. So this was never my intention to become whatever I guess I've become today. I really, really struggled with eating disorders my entire life, but primarily binge eating took over my life for 7 years. And when I went into treatment in 2013, I actually went to an outpatient treatment center. That is when I met the therapist that essentially changed my life. And I was like, you know what? I think that all of this is happening for me rather than to me. And I think this is what I'm supposed to do. And I had no idea how I was going to make it happen. And I felt so much like an imposter because I was like, I feel like I have so many of my own issues. Like, how could I ever help anybody else with theirs? And was just kind of going through the motions. And then when COVID happened, that's when my Instagram kind of started and that took off. And I never planned for it to turn into what it is now. So it truly was kind of the universe pushing me into what I needed to do and I guess where I needed to be. And here I am now, just kind of rolling with it. I have no idea where it's going to go from here, but just taking it day by day and happy to be sharing not only my story, but helping others heal their relationship with food and body.
Yeah. I mean, I can't think of like a more beautiful journey to have, and you're so good at it. So kind of rewinding just a little bit, at what point in your life did you feel like you were starting to struggle with either body image or eating, disordered eating? I find that a lot of times it takes maybe seeing yourself in someone else's story to be able to identify, oh my gosh, like that sounds so familiar, or you know, oh, maybe that's something that I should look into. So when did that kind of start for you?
Yeah, so I have a very different story, I feel like, where I grew up in a home where my family never talked about food and body. We didn't have any scales in the house. My mom never talked poorly about her body. There was never any conversations about eat this, don't eat that. I never grew up with that. Where I got the messages is that my mom is very petite and she is definitely in the quote unquote ideal body. And so as I was growing up and I was developing, I was always bigger than her. And I got messages from other people and my peers, I would say starting in seventh grade, like, your mom's so hot, like your mom's so pretty. Oh my gosh, that's your mom. And I started to look in the mirror, and that's when I started to feel negative about my body, because when I looked in the mirror, I felt like I didn't look like her at all. And so I was like, if that's the message that I'm getting about her body, then what does that mean about mine? That didn't necessarily change my food at the time, but I always had this underlying subconscious thought, I wish I was smaller, I wish I was smaller, I wish I was smaller. It wasn't until my ninth grade year that I really, I feel like, went through puberty, put on some weight, obviously developing, that I kind of flipped the switch where I got some candid photos back from a swim meet, and there was this one of me standing in obviously like a very tight racing suit, and that was it. That was the photo that was like, I cannot believe I look like this. And mind you, I was in ninth grade, and I was like, I cannot believe I look like this. Like, it felt like the end of the world. I had a major panic attack. I was like, I feel like I have to do something different. And that's when the food stuff started. So the body image was definitely, I would say, like seventh grade, I was aware of it. And then it started to just like build, 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 build. And then it was like, that was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so interesting that you say that, because I actually was a competitive swimmer as well in high school. And so I can relate. It's kind of a vulnerable place to be when you're kind of that, you're just so young. You think you're an adult, but you're so young. And I also think it's interesting that from kind of a young age, you had this idea, this mental image of yourself in your head that was just too big. And I think a lot of us can relate to like looking back at like pictures of us in middle school or high school, like prepubescent even, and being like, even then I thought I was big. And it just is the most bizarre thing. I'll look back and be like, I cannot believe my perfect little child body I thought was so big. So I think it can become like you start to identify in a certain way.
Especially when you get all the external messages as well. And then it creates that story of my worth and my identity is rooted in my body. Because if everybody is coming to me and talking about their body or mom's body or whatever the case may be, and that's where the praise is, mm-hmm. then that must be really quote unquote good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you said you kind of flipped a switch. When I assume you flipped a switch, is that when you started to restrict and binge, or what was kind of the process?
I started with full-blown restricting, and it didn't last for that long. I was not a calorie counter. There wasn't a huge push for calories at that time. Calorie counting apps weren't a thing. Thank goodness. I cannot imagine where I would have been if it was. But I started to really obsess over like the Eat This, Not That books. And I started to just like Google things. And I mean, when you Google that kind of stuff, especially in ninth grade, just very problematic things come up. And I went on this was my mission to like lose weight. And I made this book and I was like, this is the summer that I'm going to like put everything together and I'm going to change it all. And I'm going to be that quote unquote girl. And it wasn't even just about the weight. I also put in there like, look, thinking about it now, it's so interesting to think about where I got these messages. I put in there how I'm going to get whiter teeth, how I'm going to get blonder hair, how I'm going to get tanner skin, how I'm going to dress nicer, all of these different things, and how I was going to go about doing that. And I am very type A. I am very perfectionist. I am very black and white. So when I started this, I started it hard. And because I was swimming so intensely, the restriction happened and the weight loss and like all the consequences of that happened pretty fast for me. I would say it was probably only a 3-month span of just pure restriction before I hit that wall and the binges started. Now, I was already, I want to say like typical, I don't even know the correct language. I don't want to say like normal, but I was at a very average size, like did not need to lose weight. So when I started losing weight, I mean, I had just gotten my period, immediately lost it, cold all the time, hair falling out, passing out, all of the things. My swimming plummeted, but I didn't care. I didn't care because I'm like, I'm losing weight and that's all that mattered to me at that time. And the thing that I feel like really fueled it is that in the middle of that process, so this started in June. When I saw that picture and I started restricting, it was in June. And we moved. So we were living in Hawaii at the time and we moved back to Arizona in the beginning of August. And so when people started to notice everything that I was doing and get concerned, I moved and I went to this new place where nobody knew. They just thought that that was my normal body. So I was able to engage in all of these behaviors and nobody said anything. And because my parents were so busy with work and the move, like they were obviously concerned, but they had so much going on. And I kept saying, I'm fine, I'm fine, like I'm fine. Until I was very much not fine. And we went to a trip in San Diego, and it was the first time that my parents had seen me like in a bikini in a while, because they weren't coming to my swimming and I didn't have like a ton of meets because I was moving. And my dad pulled me aside and was like, Ryan, I am so worried about you. If you do not start eating when we get back home, I'm taking you to the hospital, and you are going to the hospital. And in that moment, I panicked and I was like, I'm fine. I am fine. This is not a problem. I'm going to show you this isn't a problem. And so my parents had just ordered lunch and I went and I ate all of my lunch that I had ordered. But then I like really wanted to shove it in their face that I was fine. So I was like, can I eat what you have? Can I eat what you have? Can I eat what you have? And so I ate everybody else's lunch, like picking on everybody else's lunch. And that was like the gates that opened up my binge eating. And from there, it didn't matter how hard I tried to be that girl that had so much quote unquote control, I could only make it 2-3 days until bam, I would spiral into these like massive, aggressive, violent binges.
Mm-hmm. And aggressive and violent is honestly like a very good word to describe binging for someone who may not be familiar. And I just can't help but think like, of how could you not feel like you couldn't binge again? Like, how could you not binge again when you get that huge like adrenaline rush after being so restricted? Like, it feels like you're okay again. And so I think that's a good thing to mention for people who may not be familiar. Like, how would you, like, beyond that, how would you describe binge eating, the experience of having a binge, to someone who may not understand? Because I mean, we hear things like, oh, I binge watched a TV show, and you're like, okay,
right.
it's not what it seems. You know what I mean? It's very much like you're almost watching yourself do it.
Yes. The best way that I can describe it to somebody that's never binged that might be able to understand is, you know, when you get a bug bite and you accidentally scratch it, and then all of a sudden all of your thoughts are on that bug bite and you're like, don't scratch it, don't scratch it, don't scratch it, don't scratch it, because if I scratch it, it's going to get worse. Don't scratch it, don't scratch it. And then all of a sudden you're like, I can't take it anymore. And you're like scratching it until it bleeds. And then all of a sudden you're like, why did I do that? And it's like, you can't stop until it's literally so painful that you have to stop. That's what my binges were like. And that's what binge eating is like. For me, it was this fast and rapid and compulsive and obsessive thought to eat a lot of food and eat it really fast and eat it very secretive. And when I was eating, it was never enjoying the food. It was never tasting the food. It was about getting so full and eating so fast that, yeah, it was just rapid. It didn't take very long, and I didn't feel like I could stop until I was so sick. Like, it was like, I feel like I'm going to be sick. I have to stop.
Mm-hmm. And in my experience as well, it also feels like you're almost trying to get it done so that, yes, you can be done with it. And that's, yes, another good thing to, like, if you're trying to figure out like, oh, like, am I binging or am I just really hungry? One thing that I would notice is that, yeah, the speed at which I was consuming food was like, okay, like, we got to get this done. Like, let's get this out of the way so that I can stop thinking about it. So yeah, I love that. So as you're kind of going through this, at what point were you, because you said this kind of controlled your life for like 7 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, through the ups and downs of binging and restricting, at what point were you like, okay, we're done. This isn't working. I have to do something else.
Yeah. I think it's really important to say that I had those moments many times before I was actually done,
mm-hmm,
but I wasn't truly done. So what I mean by that is I had moments where I was like, first of all, my mom was like, you need help. And so I went to a therapist, but that was like not on my own accord. And so I was not willing to hear what she had to say and was not going to do any of the work that she had. So that lasted about 2 to 3 months. And then I stopped. And then I would say about a year after that, I was like, okay, mom, I'm ready to go back. And I still wasn't ready to hear what she had to say. I went in there and I was like, I just want you to stop the binges. I don't want to talk about my family. I don't want to talk about my emotions. I don't want to talk about all of it. Like, I just want you to stop the binges. And as you know, the binges are a symptom of a greater problem. And unless we really work through why those are actually happening and all of the mental and emotional turmoil that's going on in our heads, it doesn't stop. So I would say that lasted for about another 3 months. Nothing changed. Nothing got different. And throughout all of this, I was, you know, constantly like on another diet, then on a binge spree, on another diet, on a binge spree. And I graduated high school, decided that I was going to go on this like massive weight loss kick before I went to college. It did. And when I got to college, it was like, again, the first time that I didn't have to like hide food because I wasn't living with my parents anymore. Like, I had all this freedom to just like binge on my own, and there was so much more flexibility. And so that I feel like spiraled even more. And then I went to a guidance counselor at school to see if she could help. Still wasn't willing to hear what she had to say. I went to Overeaters Anonymous. I went to a new weight loss coach. I went to Food Addicts Anonymous. And I felt like I tried everything. And I was the classic, like, I've done everything and nothing's worked. And it's like, but did you really? Right. And so it was my sophomore year of college where I had made up my mind to binge. I went to the grocery store, got all of the binge foods. Like, this was a very much planned binge. I had a few different types of binges, whether it be kind of like I was eating and it would then automatically kind of just like go into a binge. And then I had planned binges, and this was a planned binge. And all of my roommates that I lived with said they were going out, and they asked me to go with them. And I was like, you know what? I'm not really feeling well. I'm going to stay here. And I was like, perfect. I'm going to have the house to myself. Like, amazing. I can just binge. This is going to be the best night ever. And so they leave. I binge. I'm sitting on the floor with the wrappers all around me. I open up my phone to Snapchat and I see them all out having fun. And I'm like, this is my life. This is my life. And I am ending my sophomore year doing the same thing that I have been doing since freshman year of high school. I can't keep doing this. And in that moment, I was like, I'm more afraid to stay the same than I am to do something different. And I was like, I don't care what somebody tells me to do. I don't care what happens to my body. I don't care like how hard this is going to be. Nothing can be harder than this. Nothing can be harder than this. And nothing can be worse than this. And so I called my mom and I was like, hey, I know we've tried this many times before, and I know that it hasn't done anything, but things are different, and I know you don't understand. I just need help. And I left home that summer and made it my mission that summer to recover. And I went to an outpatient treatment program and totally immersed myself in all things recovery and came out the other side.
Wow. So pre you being ready to recover, what was your fear? Like, what kept you from like wanting to recover, right? Because you want to stop the binges, but I also think there's like two phases where you're like, I want the binges to stop, like part A, like this is a problem. And then there's part B, I want to actually like heal. I want to fix this. Were you just afraid of maybe gaining weight or losing control or like losing autonomy? Like, what was your fear?
You know what's interesting is I never really had a fear of weight gain because my binges were so massive. I was like, if I could just stop the binges, then my weight would settle. Mm-hmm. For me, it was giving up the diet. It was it's just the next time. Like, the next time I do it, I'll stick to it and then I'll lose weight. It was that. For me, I think it was less about the fear and more about I just could not let go of this fantasy. I could not let go that I had done it before. I can do it again. I can do it again. And this next time is going to be different. And so when I was going to these therapists and different programs, and they were like, okay, you need to eat this much and you need to do this, and we're going to challenge your thoughts. I'm like, no, like, I don't want to do that. I just want you to stop the binges so I can keep dieting. And that's like, it was just like tunnel vision. And that's where it was for me, where it was so, it was all about the body, like all about the body, and this false belief that when I get the body then, and if I don't, if I stop dieting, then that dream that I've been telling myself for years and years and years and years and years means that that's gone too.
And how was it to like, to look back on your little ninth grade self who had restricted and lost all this weight and see what was truly happening? Like, I, in my own personal life, I was about the same age actually, when I had first, you know, had my really restrictive phase, and it took me years to be able to look back on that girl and be like, she was a very sick and sad and confused little girl. She was so little. Yeah. How is it, just kind of from your perspective, to look back and be like, oh, like, that's what was happening. That wasn't just like the one time I was successful. That was when it was the worst.
Yeah. It makes me sad. Like, it makes me so sad to think that in that moment, I made a choice that meant that I was going to miss out on so many things that I'll never get back. And I wish that I could go back and tell her so many things about her worth and how amazing she is and how this doesn't matter and how incredible she is, like, separate from her body and just and who she is. And I think that it took me a long time to look back to and to look back and be like, it was that one choice in that moment that spiraled the next 7 years that I can't change. And obviously they made me into who I am today, but I'd be lying if I said it doesn't make me really sad to think that I missed out on so many high school and college things that I'll never get back. And I really don't have any high school and college friends because my eating disorder was my best friend. And there are, I don't have a ton of pictures from that period of my life. And that was such like a huge, you go through it once, and I, yeah, it just, it makes me sad.
Yeah. And I think it's something that you kind of almost have to grieve. And I think that's something that I would want to drive home to anyone listening, is we often kind of glamorize these times in our life that we're quote unquote successful, we're at a low body weight. And I don't know if people are aware of all of the things that you are giving up. Like, it, it comes with such a high price. Like, I think back and I was like, the weekends were my worst nightmare. I remember being so terrified that my parents would want to go out to eat, or that like my siblings would want to make like a boxed brownie mix on Sunday night, or, you know, any of these like very normal and happy like weekend activities were terrifying, you know? And
or I don't know about you, but I was nasty. Like, I was mean. I was just snappy. I was rude, like not me at all. And even just like you said, for example, like parents would say, let's go out to dinner. And I'd be like, I can't believe that you would, you know, just so nasty.
Yeah. And it almost kind of steals your personality. And I remember just being so consumed. Like, a lot of girls that age were like, I'm trying to think of what was big back then. They were, you know, enjoying like shopping in middle school for the first time and, you know, all of these fun things. And I was thinking about how to drop my calories lower and lower and lower. And I thought about it all day. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night because you're thinking about it. And so when we glamorize it, I feel like I want to shout from the rooftops. I'm like, it is not what you think. It is not what you think it's going to be, you know, at the end of this, because I'm very type A as well. Like, you know, I can do this. This is success. Yeah. I just, like you said, you can lose your period, your hair thins. It's a dark place to be.
And with the weight gain conversation, obviously that's a biggie that comes up. And that's when it comes back to, yeah, but like, what else are you gaining? Mm-hmm. What else are you gaining? Because I don't know about you, but I would choose this body and a body much larger any day over missing out on all of those things, not being able to go on spontaneous dinner dates, friends dates, feeling that way, missing out on things, like not live.
Yeah, you lose so much. So as you kind of transitioned, you said you came out the other side. What was the biggest help? Like, what was the biggest help in your recovery for someone who might be kind of starting recovery? Maybe they're in the thick of recovery. What were like your top three or however many things that you're like, okay, I can do this. This helps me have my, you know, structure.
Right. And I think structure is such a great word because that is what I had. So when I went to outpatient treatment, I had two groups a week and a therapist a week. And then I was also going to Eating Disorders Anonymous. I don't know if you ever heard of that, but it's a 12-step program just like AA, but it is for eating disorders, just for extra support. I don't love everything that they do, but it was nice to get that extra support. So I had a touch point at least every other day where I was in some kind of recovery space. And that for me was so helpful when I had those moments of being like, I just want to go back to the diet, or I don't want to do this, or I don't want to do this homework assignment, or I don't want to journal, or I really want to binge. I have all of these people to reach out to. And also I'm either going to see them today or I'm going to see them tomorrow. And for me, there is so many people that reach out to me and they're like, I really want to work with you individually. And I'm like, I hear that. And I understand there are people that work better individually. However, I cannot deny the power of a community and like group and having that extra support when you are going through this. It is just, it's a game changer. So I would say having the multiple touch points throughout your day, and there are a ton of free support areas if, you know, finances are tight. I just took it day by day. I think when you think about the whole journey and everything that it's going to be and the fact that it's going to be your entire life, right? Like, I can't just like forget it. It is something that I have to repeatedly do on a regular basis. And thinking about continuing the rest of my life in this new lifestyle was very overwhelming. And so just taking it day by day. And then also, I'm like the queen of, if I am paying for a service, like therapy or coaching or whatever, you better bet that I'm going to juice every ounce of what I can get out of that. And so I was regularly asking questions. I was regularly being like, this is where my brain is going. Why is this happening? When I went to therapy, I never went without a game plan of what we were going to talk about. I was like, this is what I want to accomplish in this session. I was like, I, you know, am making a commitment to do this. I am going to put in the effort. So I would say my biggies are having that structure with multiple touch points, taking it day by day, and then making sure that you are fully committing yourself to the process.
Absolutely. So just kind of like, as you were going through this, when you said there were days when you really, really want to binge, and like the closest way I can describe it is it's like, it's almost like you're like jonesing to binge. Like for me, I remember I would like go in and out of the kitchen. You know, you might open the fridge a million times or the cupboards. What do you suggest doing kind of in that moment where you're like, I am not okay. I want to binge. You know, I'm trying to, because, you know, you're always just kind of trying to fill some kind of gap or some need that hasn't been filled. What do you do kind of just in the moment when you are like in the trenches?
It's such a tough answer because you know that when you're in that moment, it's so hard to think rationally. I think having a game plan ahead of time of like, this is what I'm going to do when I have this urge, whether it be this is a box that I'm going to put together of soothing, therapeutic things. This is a list of things that I can do. This is a list of people that I'm going to call. Like for me, I had a list of people that I could call or text at any time. And then also with that being said, the urge to binge doesn't just come out of anywhere. So when I had those moments of like, I'm having the urge to binge, I would then go to either group or my therapist and be like, what, like, let's talk through this because I need to figure out like where this is coming from. I think that one of the biggest, what is the word that I'm looking for? Just one of the biggest, I don't want to say like mistake, but things that keep people stuck. That's what it is. Things that keep people stuck is that they have this moment, right? Where it's like, I have this overwhelming urge to binge. And then it's like, I'm just trying to get through it. And then they go into, okay, I'm just going to forget about that and keep moving forward. But it's like, no, like we need to figure out what that was all about. And so for me, it was definitely having those things of like, this is what I'm going to do when it happens. And then after it happens, you bet I'm going to reflect and figure out why that happened because I don't want to feel that way again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's kind of like a very desperate feeling. Kind of pivoting just a little bit. I would love to kind of address this. And I know it's just an emotionally charged subject for a lot of people. What are your thoughts on intentional weight loss? Obviously, as a binge eating therapist, it's a really hard topic. You know, there are times where, you know, you want to feel good in your body, you want to feel safe in your body, all of these things. At the same time, restricting is proven to lead to binging, right? It's a pendulum. I don't know anyone that can escape it. So for people who are just kind of up in their heads, like, but what do I do? What would you say?
Let's start with asking yourself what it is that you actually want. I personally believe that the desire to lose weight is a very surface level goal. And when you say, I want to lose weight, I want to know why. Like, I want to go deeper than that. I want to know what you're actually after. Usually when I ask this question, it falls into two categories. It's something physical, like I want to feel stronger, I want to feel faster, I want to feel more energized for my health, I want to feel more alive, or it's something more social, like I want confidence, I want acceptance, I want to be approved. I want to have the approval. And when we can start looking at what it is that you're really after, let's take, I'm after something really physical. Like I need to improve my health and I want to be faster. I want to be more energized. I want to start taking better care of myself. Well, what does that have to do with the number on a scale? And why can't we start focusing on behaviors, because weight isn't a behavior, that actually get you those things? For example, if you want to feel energized, can we take a step back and be like, how can I take care of myself? What can I add in that is going to help me feel more energized? If it's about your health, what can I do or what can I add in to increase health promoting behaviors, like drinking more water, putting my food on a plate, balancing my plate, getting in movement that I love, getting in more sleep? The thing that keeps a lot of people stuck is the social side. I want more confidence. I want to be accepted. I want the relationship. I want the dream. I want the fantasy. And the problem with that is that that is all mental. And you could, quote unquote, lose the weight and still hate your body, still not have confidence, still not have the relationship. And odds are you've been in a smaller body and have still been miserable. And that is proof right there that it's never been about your weight. And so what I would say is let's go deeper and then focus on behaviors rather than the number, because it goes so much deeper than the number, and the number is just going to get you back into that problematic cycle when it's like you're not even after the number. You're after something else, and just focusing on that number is going to get you back into a place that you don't want to be in. Odds are, I don't know about you, but I would totally deflect and be like, no, I'm doing this for my health. But then I was ignoring my hunger and I was eating, you know, all of these things that, you know, like chemical things. Like I was having like the zero calorie peanut butter instead of like, you know, just like a regular peanut butter, you know what I mean? And it's like, is that healthy? And we can really start to challenge that definition of health. And it is a tough conversation because with this, we are unpacking those deeper stories of, when did you learn that your body is wrong and what is this really about? And that's uncomfortable. Not to mention, a lot of people use weight loss as a deflection of sitting in the suck of solving the actual problem, right? So it's like, all my life I've been told that if I just lose weight, then all of the things that I've ever wanted are going to come true. So if I'm struggling in my relationship, if I'm having a tough time at work, if my kids are struggling and I don't know how to help them, what seems easier? Go on a juice cleanse or sit through all of the pain and discomfort of working through what is going on in your relationship? What is going on with your kiddos? And that's why I say weight loss is a surface level goal.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and I think it's so interesting that you say that it's a surface level goal, and it is, but that there's always something deeper. And I think a lot of times people feel guilt, you know, especially if you've kind of like immersed yourself, you know, in intuitive eating, you're starting to become more aware of diet culture, you might feel guilty or dumb being like, oh, why do I want to lose weight? And like, I know my body is, you know, we want to be healthy and all of these things. And I think, first of all, my personal opinion is that you shouldn't feel guilty, but let's also address why. Like, why are you hurting so bad? Like, it's not wrong to want to be happy. Like, it's not wrong to want to be comfortable and confident. Like, those are all good things, but why is it hurting you so bad? So I love that perspective.
Exactly. And when you bring up that point about guilt, what I love to do as a therapist is, because, you know, I'm an emotions gal, let's dive into what these emotions actually are. So, for example, guilt is an emotion that we feel when we believe that we've done something wrong, or we have something that's wrong, or we are. No, shame is I am wrong. When you are like, my body is wrong, I'm feeling guilt over my body, that is translating into my body is wrong. And so we can start to question that, just like you said, by saying things like, why do I think this is wrong? Like, who taught me that? Why is it wrong? Do I think other people's bodies in this size or larger are wrong? Like, why is it different for me? And we can really start to just unpack that ourselves by questioning over and over without that judgment, because it is a very normal thing to want to be liked and accepted and loved. And it's not, I mean, it's hard to deny that we live in a thin obsessed world, and thin privilege is 100% a thing. And so, yeah, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So kind of pivoting just a little bit, I was just watching through some of your videos and you said something to the effect, I hope I don't butcher it too much, but that at one point in your life, you thought that food was your greatest joy and that you may not experience a greater joy than food. And like, what's changed for you? Like, what other joys and satisfactions have you experienced kind of on the other side of this? Because when you're in it, I mean, this might sound crazy to people who haven't experienced it, but when food is the center of what your satisfaction comes from, it can feel really confusing to be like, I don't know what else. Yeah. I'm looking for.
I'm so happy you brought this up, because this is something that people tell me all the time, right? I just don't think that I can find anything that brings me any more pleasure than food. And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. I was the same way. And then I realized when I was eating, I was never sitting down enjoying the food that I actually wanted. I was never actually tasting the food. I was never actually experiencing the food. So is that really finding pleasure in food, or is that numbing? And in that moment, I was like, yeah, no wonder why going for a walk, reading a book, et cetera, isn't giving me the same pleasure, because those things aren't numbing. And so it took me a while to realize it wasn't that I just loved food. It was that I loved being numbed by food. And when I started to heal my relationship with food and I started to slow down and I started to taste food, I realized I do really find pleasure in food, but me finding pleasure in food now is that I put it on a plate and I sit down and I choose what I want and I taste the different flavors and I choose different flavors and I taste that, and it's a full-blown experience, no different than reading a book and having that experience or doing all of these other fun things. And to answer your question, finding pleasure in other areas other than food, it started with really redefining pleasure and getting honest with myself about, is that really pleasure or is that numbing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so fascinating because I think, you know, people who are like, okay, like I want to get past this, I want to get past binging. I think a common thought is like, but I do love food. I do genuinely enjoy food apart from, you know, sometimes the numbing effects that I appreciate it for. But I love that, you know, once you can recover, once you can get through this, you can enjoy it in such a pure, present way. And it's not your enemy. It's just something that you can enjoy as part of being a human who needs to eat.
Totally. It's like, I enjoy the flavors. I enjoy the experience. I enjoy every aspect of it. It's not just, I enjoy getting really full.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So just to kind of wrap up, I would love if you just wanted to give kind of three like phrases that you use consistently to be kind to yourself, or that you teach your clients to be kind to yourself, just to kind of get it started in people's heads.
Yes. I love that you brought this up because I think that this is one of the most underrated coping skills, which is talking to yourself. And it's going to feel really silly at first. However, I promise you it is a game changer because essentially what you're doing is reparenting. And some of the things that I even used on myself today, but can be really helpful in recovering from binge eating. I'm a diehard pause, breathe, you're okay. Whatever is going on, whether it's food, relationship, work, because all of it's connected, right? It doesn't matter what is going on. If something is problematic in your relationship, you're struggling with food, that's going to come back to your food. So regularly being like, pause, breathe, I'm okay. With that point that you said earlier about guilt, I didn't do anything wrong, or I'm not a bad person, are biggies. When you express any shame or guilt around your body or food that you're eating, you ate something, you feel guilt. I didn't do anything wrong. You look in the mirror, you don't like what you see, or you feel shame. I'm not a bad person. And those are really good ones. And then the last one, I guess I have to wrap it up with, you don't know until you try, because that's just like my slogan. You don't know until you try. And as someone who was queen of, I'm just going to assume the worst and not do it, it is truly a matter of, you don't know until you try. And each moment in recovery, when you're like, that's not going to work, or that's not the answer, this is going to be miserable, or that's not the solution, you don't know until you try. Awesome. You don't know until you try.
I love that. Well, where can people find you so that we can find you and follow along? You have so many resources and educational videos. I just went on and on and on. I was like, okay, there's so much, truly. Like, for even just like the free content on your Instagram is just out of this world. So just tell us all the places that we can find you.
You can find me anywhere at It's Ryan Nicole. That is my tagline for anything. So whether it be itsryannicole.com or It's Ryan Nicole on Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, all of the places. And I currently have a free challenge going on right now to help you break your fear food. So that's kind of been my thing, is sitting down with you guys on my Instagram and eating these foods with you. But because Instagram reels are so short, I wasn't able to like fully eat them with you. And I had some requests of, can you sit down and literally eat these foods with me? So I put together 5 different videos of totally different foods to quite literally sit down and eat them with you. There is no stop or pause or fast forward. Like, I'm literally eating them with you and talking you through calming yourself down. So if you're listening to this, go to breakmybinge.com and you can download that free challenge.
That's awesome. And just such a good way to practice and kick off your own healing journey, kind of wherever you're at. But thank you so much for coming on. It was such a privilege to have you.
So welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So just for everyone else listening, I would just so appreciate if, first of all, if you would go and check out Ryan and all of her resources. I'll link those in show notes. And then also go ahead and rate and review the podcast. And we will see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.